Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, Mac.
Hello. Hello.
Yay! We are all here now. This is Cindy F. Solomon from the San Francisco Bay Area. Delighted to be here today with Mac McCoy from Product Camp SoCal and my co-host Adrian Tan from Australia. This is the Global Product Management Talk. Today we are talking about what product managers must learn from brand management to succeed. And Mac McCoy will lead us today to talk about product managers' appreciation of brand impressions and everything that goes with that. So welcome and thank you for being here today.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
Okay, so we are tweeting from tweetchat.com/room/prodmanagementtalk is our hashtag, PRODMGMTTALK. Tell us a little bit about yourself, Mac, and I will tweet out the intro I have.
Okay, sure. So as Cindy said, my name is Mac McCoy. And a little bit about me is, where to start? Well, I've been involved in product management for well over a decade. Kind of stumbled into it, in fact. I was on the technical side and doing, you know, business analyst work and quality assurance work and all that sort of stuff. And my manager noticed that I sort of had a knack for looking at a bigger picture and kind of being able to ask questions from the consumer point of view and really approach problems from that angle. And they thought I would be a really good fit for that kind of role. And fortunately, I worked for a company that believed in rotating high potential employees through various functions. I ended up in product management and have stayed ever since. And I absolutely love it, whether you're talking product management or product marketing. I tend to come at it from, again, the consumer's point of view. So even though I'm not a brand manager by training or profession, I know enough about it to be dangerous, hopefully in a good way.
Danger in product management.
Yes, exactly, Adrian. You know, most of my background is technology-based, right, on the hardware side and the software side. And right now, kind of what's my focus is good old Product Camp SoCal, because the third Product Camp SoCal is coming up on October 15th, and, you know, we're hoping to set some new records for ourselves and really just make this the best Product Camp SoCal ever.
You know what would be awesome? If all the founders of the product camps got together.
That would be fantastic, absolutely.
Saying, how do you think we can do this?
Oh, are you asking me? Because
everybody, I'm putting it out there. How do you think
we'll do a digital conference.
Yes, exactly.
We can all get on Skype, and if Skype limits us to 10, I'll find another tool that will let us be live together.
I think that would be an excellent conversation, and I think we could probably set an agenda and come out with some objectives and set some standards for product camps.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a fantastic idea, Adrian. You know, we have had conversations with various camps, both in person and via phone, as we were learning, you know, with Austin and Atlanta and Seattle and others, Silicon Valley, Boston. So I think you're right. That's a really great idea. Bring us all together.
Yeah.
Okay, let's do it. Let's do it under the Alliance of Product Professionals.
I was just going to say, Cindy, this sounds like a task for you.
Yes.
I'm acting as a project manager now and assigning this task to Cindy.
Okay. We now have the domain name Allop, A-L-L-O-P-P.
Yes.
And there's a launch page collecting emails.
Fabulous. I've registered.
Excellent.
Shall we start?
Yeah. To welcome Erica.
I see Erica joined from Salt Lake. Hello.
So the first question is, how is customer experience defined by your organization?
And the reason that's the first question is because, again, for me, as I mentioned in my background, it always starts with the customer. And so before I kind of get into that, I guess, a little bit, I also want to take a step back and ask about people's understanding of what brand management is versus what product management. That's why we added those definitions earlier in packet, because I think until you understand what brand management and product management are, we can get into some kind of very complex debates about customer experience, right? Where it begins and where it ends. Because a product manager who's more technically focused, for example, like in that definition, very kind of new product development centered, is going to be pretty intent on that end user and the features that they may or may not be building into their new product for that end user. Whereas a brand manager or a product manager who looks at things from a bigger picture is asking a more fundamental question. They are asking, what is the pain that the customer is trying to solve. And one of the reading materials that I sent to you is entitled Finding the Right Job for Your Product Reveals Innovation Opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a great little summary of a fantastic paper from MIT's Sloan Management Review. Unfortunately, the whole article isn't publicly available. Go to SlideShare, which I don't recommend, or you go to MIT and you spend $6 for the PDF. What's great about this article is it asks the question, which I think is so critically important today, which is, what are consumers trying to do or solve by buying your product or service? And what's interesting about that is the consumer may not always know why, right? It may not be something conscious,
yes,
which is why things like the use of ethnography or anthropology in product management are growing so quickly, because you're able to really kind of get in there and understand pain points and almost subconscious need, purchase decision points that consumers can't articulate when you ask them in a focus group or a survey. So
why do you think this is a brand manager role? Because product managers essentially do the same thing. Product managers ask customers or try to identify what problems customers have.
No, that's absolutely right, Adrian. I mean, a good product manager will do that. But a good product manager typically, and again, I'm speaking in substantial generalities here, right?
Sure, that's okay.
But even a good product manager tends to stay within their pitch, right, within their field of grasp. They don't necessarily recognize, seek out, and go after the other ancillary areas that affect their product and the larger brand. I mean, look at it this way. Many new startups, whether you're talking an app company or a hardware company or what have you, are often one product companies. So in essence, the entire brand promise of whatever that brand is instantiated and sustained and supported by that one product. So it's incumbent upon the product manager to look more broadly if there is not brand management support in their organization, because otherwise they will miss things that are critically important to the overall success of their brand and therefore that one single product. Does that make sense?
Yep. I'm trying to summarize that in 140 characters.
And we shifted to an audio presentation today with Twitter commentary.
So what you're saying, Cindy, is I'm not readily tweetable.
It's great that you're prepared to, you're giving us a presentation, and it's great because there's so much we can learn.
No problem, Cindy. Oh, I was just going to say, no problem, Cindy, although I'm glad it's coming across as though I'm prepared. So go ahead, Adrian.
Is it fair to say, according to yourself, a product manager may not seek opportunities outside of their, I guess, product experience, whereas a brand manager does?
Yes. Think of it another way. The definitions that I forwarded for brand management and product management were almost somewhat intentionally provocative, because the brand management definition from managementstudyguide.com is nice and broad, because it talks about what brand management is at its core: developing a promise, whatever that promise is, that your brand is going to embody, making that promise to the market and to your customers, and then maintaining that promise. And so let me try and take just those three little things here before I move on to the product management side and try and give a concrete example. And my apologies to all of the people who will be calling me a fanboy in a moment, but look at Apple, right? As a technical company, a heavily entrenched, high-tech company that does some amazing, amazing products, they've developed a set of promises that hold up the Apple brand. And you could almost ask anybody, who is a consumer in many countries across the world, and they will be able to roughly articulate what those promises are for Apple. And surprisingly, over the years and across product and product families, Apple has done a fantastic job of maintaining those promises. There's a, there's a consistency there that you can't find with almost any other company in technology, which is in part why they are so phenomenally successful. So now let me flip over to the product management definition to try and give a contrast. So product management, and again, I was trying to be somewhat provocative, the Wikipedia definition of product management seems to be intentionally focused on new product development. They say, quote, while involved with the entire product lifecycle, product management's main focus is on the driving of new product development. And then they go on, you know, to talk about superior and differentiated new products, and that being kind of the way to deliver unique benefits and superior value to the customer. And that right there, that the unique benefits and superior value to the customer is the number one driver of success and product profitability. And what's so interesting about those two sentences is they are so astonishingly narrowly focused at new product development. And there's a potential there for people who, you know, and it's not that they're bad or incompetent or not incredibly passionate and caring about what they're trying to launch. These people are so focused on trying to develop and deliver unique benefits that they believe are a superior value to the customer that they may lose sight of what it is that the customer actually values. So, in other words, product management in technology has a tendency to focus on the technology and not the customer.
Yeah.
And that's kind of why I'm pushing for product managers to take a step back in software and hardware and think about it more from a brand perspective.
Yep.
Does that help summarize?
Yes, it does. I think what you're trying to say is that sometimes we get caught up in the red shiny object, the technology, and we forget that our job is to really focus on what the customer needs are.
Precisely.
And perhaps if we use brand principles and brand management, we might be enlightened a little.
Yes, because, for example, to go back, I've tangented all over the place, which I do when I talk, but to try and bring it back full circle to the first question, how is customer experience defined in your organization? In an organization that looks at it from the bigger picture, from the brand management perspective or from a global product perspective, they will be looking at customer experience comprehensively. And so they will think about, what is the pre-sales experience for a customer like? You know, the messaging that we use there. How do we go from pre-sales down the funnel to an actual sale? What is that experience like? Once the sale has happened, then we move to installation or activation. What's that experience like? And then we go into the day-to-day use of the product. Again, what are those experiences like? Uh-oh, we have a support issue come up. Let's imagine what the support processes and experiences are like. And then finally, at the end of all of that, it's time for upgrade or retirement, recycling of the product, again, from the consumer perspective. I'm not talking product life cycle, you're retiring a product. I'm talking from the consumer standpoint, my device is however many years old or months old or whatever. And what's that experience like? And, oh, by the way, at that point, how do I get them back to me to buy the next version? And so when you look at it from that perspective, and you look at kind of the steps that are taken, again, you can look at Apple as a best-in-class example. At every single one of those points, Apple has applied laser focus to what the pre-sales experience is like. I mean, oh my gosh, you can walk into an Apple store, and it is amazingly chill, not high stress, buy, buy, buy now. It's, oh, hey, you want to check your email? Sure, go over there and use that device. Right.
Eric is asking, is customer experience and brand experience the same thing?
Ooh, that's a good question, Erica. I would say customer experience is a subset of brand experience, that it drives brand experience. And the reason I say that,
go ahead.
So I would say customer experience feeds brand experience because there are more things in brand experience, right? There is all of the messaging that you put out into the market, you know, whether you're talking big ad buys on TV, billboards, online, whatever, that's a messaging experience that also feeds your brand experience, right? So you have to add all of these other pieces together. But I would say probably, Erica, a consumer experience or customer experience, it may be the biggest part of what drives your brand experience.
You know, it's really funny because when you describe brand experience, I see that. Product manager.
Well,
sorry, when you talk about Brad.
Fantastic, Adrian. Good. You were already there.
Thanks. When Mac described brand management and essentially looking at the customer experience from acquisition right through to service and billing and retirement, I think of that as product management.
So let me ask you a question, Adrian. Do you also, I guess, when you're looking at the whole life cycle, include the more intangible aspects of your product or service? So kind of how you're going to build and maintain an emotional connection with that customer?
No, now that's probably the difference.
Okay, because, yeah, I mean, what you...
And I think perhaps it's that emotional connection. Absolutely, you know, when we build product at BrainMates, we look at how easy is it to buy the product, how easy is it to get the information. So we, I guess, drive a lot of that before we build anything. But perhaps the emotional connection is missing in our...
I mean, it's exactly. It's all of those intangibles that we maybe don't think about in our product lifecycle process. I mean, for example, building customer loyalty, right?
Yeah.
Or persuading the customer in the first place to buy your product. Establishing and maintaining an emotional connection. I mean, again, I hate to sound like a broken record or a fanboy. All you need to do really is tear apart, from a product management perspective, how Apple does their work, how Apple works. And you will learn all of the secrets of being a truly world-class product management organization.
Yeah.
I mean, it's easier said than done because Apple is amazing and huge and complex, but approach them as a customer. Do your own anthropological research and open your eyes and see what is the sales process like at Apple if I was brand new and coming in? And then ask yourself, why is mine not like that?
So Eric, it says, customer experience is biggest part of the brand experience. Thanks. And I commented that how I would think you would measure brand management, brand success, is by the customer's impression, experience, and their resulting behavior.
Yes, I see that. I mean, absolutely. You can use, there are lots of different metrics, right? You can use things like how to measure, you know, your customer loyalty or measure engagement. You can measure how many advocates you have and kind of the positive or negative communication that's going on online. One of the most powerful things I think that's come out of social media for us in product and branding is the ability to see what so many of our customers are now talking about. You know, before we had to spend hundreds of thousands of dollars or tens of thousands of dollars, depending on how big your research budget was, even millions, to figure out what your customers thought of your products. And now, post social media or post web 2.0, whatever you want to say, they're talking about it all the time online. So now all you have to do is find the right tools to be able to aggregate and analyze what they're talking about, and there are plenty of those.
Erica says, I thought designers ruled Apple, not product managers.
Designers definitely have a big role at Apple, but again, that's another secret. Remember the couple of times that Steve talks over the last, I think, 2 years, where he would mention the crossroads of technology and humanities, and that's what Apple always tries to stay on as a mark. They never want to, in other words, cross too far into becoming a tech-obsessed company or a humanities-obsessed company.
Yep.
They want to balance, and that's what designers do. Well, good designers.
Shall we go on to question two?
Yes.
Certainly touched on it quite a bit.
Yeah.
Question two is, where does customer experience begin and end when you think about your products and services?
Yeah, sure. No, that's, we've been touching on some of that already. And the key there is, where does it not begin, right? I mean, it should be right there at the top of your mind all the time. And does it ever end? Because what you're building, if you're successful, is a relationship with your customer. And a relationship needs to be nurtured. And ideally, you want it to grow, right? You want them to buy more of your product, spend more with you. So you should be thinking about the brand experience and the customer experience as comprehensively as you can, because you want them to have you at the top of their mind as though you were almost the unique and only solution, right? I mean, that's what you want. Trying to be more succinct as opposed to meandering. Well, to Adrian's point earlier, that good product management, it should be looking at all of these touch points. Again, I mean, I think good product managers absolutely do. There's no question about that. What I think tends to happen, and again, I'm speaking in gross generalities, I'm not suggesting that there aren't product managers already doing this, because I think manifestly some companies are successful precisely because they already are. But good product managers who are trying to do this don't lose sight of the humanity as they are trying to deploy their technology or their new product. And that means that try to think about it always from that human perspective, from that end customer perspective, and not make overly complicated sales processes or installation processes. And when I say overly complicated, I don't mean for you. I don't mean for an engineer in your company. I mean for that average person who is likely to be a consumer and buyer of your product.
Absolutely.
So, you know, I've been in many, many meetings throughout my career, unfortunately, with product managers who say, oh, this is incredibly easy. You know? And my question is often, to who? Looking at a display that is however many buttons and how many ever different colors, and it's like, you've been looking at that for how many weeks? Of course it's easy for you.
Exactly. And you've basically conceptualized it and not really considered how the customer's going to use it. So it's easy for you because you've thought about it for yourself.
Yes.
Erica says, so you're really responding to what you're saying, and she says, so you're not limiting customer experience to just product use, but from first setup, etc. And I've just said yes on your behalf.
Thank you.
I think today's talk's really good because it's really taking you back to base. This is what product management should be all about, not just technology focused.
Yes, very true. What I was going to say was customer experience should be defined first and foremost by the customer, not us. So, you know, we often try and scope customer experience in a far more limited way than the customer ever would. So how can that be the right definition, right? Should user test not only test product design, but set up uploads? Oh, absolutely. Absolutely, yes. I mean, again, it's about trying to understand fundamentally here, what we're talking about is trying to get somebody to buy something, right?
Yeah.
So why would someone buy something? They would buy it because they think it's cool. So that's all about branding and marketing. I mean, you could build, you know, all of that and good design. They would buy it because it solves some kind of pain point or it has a cool feature. It's a must-have device, et cetera. So if it's a functional reason that they're buying it for, right, they have a pain they need to solve or a job to do, then you need to understand what that job is and the best way to do that is to understand kind of the pain that they're experiencing. They may or may not be able to articulate that. So study it, figure it out, whether it's, you know, ethnography, anthropology, you know, user surveys. Once you understand all of that, then you can define customer experience. And you design it three levels, visceral, behavioral, and reflective. Yes. I think Erica should be giving this talk.
Yes, Erica.
She's on it.
She's very humble.
Well, she knows what she's talking about.
Yes, Erica, you do.
I just followed Erica because I love the background too, Erica, by the way.
Yes.
In your company position, who's responsible for the overall customer experience? Who's really in the driver's seat? Well, that's a really good question because so many companies do things differently. I mean, some companies actually have a brand management function. Some companies have marketing functions. Some companies have product functions. Some have engineers. Some have designers. What's interesting is that if you were to ask a person in any one of those functions, many of them would all answer that they're responsible for the customer experience and that therefore they should be the driver. And that to be a fun negotiation for the product manager who's in the middle often in organizations such as that. But for organizations that aren't so functionally rich, think startups or smaller companies or just other industries that don't have all of those functions usually, you would, as a product manager, want to try and be responsible to the extent possible of the overall customer experience. Because how else would your product be successful and therefore your company successful if you didn't control that experience? And as far as my follow-up question, I was curious what some people would say to it. So, Erica, what would you say? Who's really in the driver's seat? Exactly. It's always the customer, Adrian, but I was wondering what Erica would say. I bet she'd say the same thing. She's blushing. So, I mean, after everything that I've said so far, I think it's pretty clear what my perspective is on question three. Does anyone think it is anyone other than we've already mentioned?
No, I don't think so. I think you'll find that we probably all agree.
Okay. Well, that's an easy one.
I'll tell you, though, if you're in discussions that aren't product managers, they never point to the product manager.
No.
I was in a discussion this morning about customer experience. I had to put in that product managers are responsible for the strategy
of
driving it. And that was not what they weren't thinking strategy so much as putting out fires
and
preventing the fires. But they didn't couch it as strategy the same way we approach it.
Right. And Bree and Erica both chimed in. In some ways, their tweets are interconnected because oftentimes the people with the most empathy are in marketing or they may be in customer service, again, generally speaking, in many organizations. What I want to touch on is Bree's second sentence where she mentioned often responsible for driving potential customers to become current customers. And that's true. That's absolutely what marketing and sales do. But shouldn't we go further? Because once you have a customer, you want to keep them. And again, once you have that customer, you want to grow them. So I guess you could argue that marketing also has responsibility for that growth of current customers. But for keeping them, who does that fall to? I would say not necessarily marketing. I would say it probably falls to customer service or engineering.
A triage.
Exactly, a triage sort of thing if it's a support issue. Could also fall to engineering and other departments when you're enhancing existing products, you know, adding features for software update. That's how you keep current customers. It's interesting, Bree and Erica, those are thoughtful. What does Liz here say? Is that not everyone? Yeah, it should be Liz. It definitely should be. Unfortunately, we've all seen it, right? We've all seen a developer who will say something like, gosh, if that customer can't figure that out, then they're not smart enough to use the product. And of course, I'm being polite and trying to make my sentence kid-friendly because I've heard developers say quite worse things. Or maybe a finance person, right, who says we can't afford that. That's not very empathetic, but that's their job. So person driving should listen more than speak. Again, Erica, my gosh, you should be here. That's so right. Because how else can you learn what the customer is going through if you don't listen and observe far more than you are selling? It's funny, this is because I've done B2B and B2C work throughout my career. And one of the things that I learned in B2B very, very early on, which is business to business for those, is really good salespeople going on a sales team visit to a customer. It's amazing to watch them work, and you realize that they've built such a rapport with that customer. They've built such a great relationship. That's why we're successful with them. Not necessarily that our products are the most technically amazing or groundbreaking products. It's us, you know, that buyer at that company. When you stop and you think about that, you go, wow. How do you take that and translate it into B2C, right, into businesses selling to consumers? And you can create that. You can create that unimpeachable relationship and connection with a consumer. They'll buy your products every day. Whether or not you're the cheapest or the most technically superior, kind of look at Apple. My gosh, I'm a broken record. But you can look at Apple and say, you know, sure, their laptops aren't the most technically sophisticated on the market. Design-wise, I think they're the most beautiful. I may be biased. They're certainly not the cheapest. But again, they sell astonishingly well. Why is that? It's the total package. It's the relationship.
So Q4 is what drives your customer's decision-making for buying/upgrading your products/services? Do you know and should you care? a leading question.
Yes. Sorry. I started going there.
Q4. Jeffrey Anderson says that all the time.
Yes.
By the way, I saw a tweet that he was abandoning Twitter. I wasn't sure if he meant for that moment or forever. I haven't...
Yeah, I don't know. I'm not sure if he's gone permanently.
I'll make an intervention to get him back.
That would be good. It has been, 3 days since his last tweet, so... Not that I know that off the top of my head or anything.
Okay, so answer to question 4.
What does Bree here say? Absolutely, to encourage brand loyalty. Yes, Often the first impression is in marketing. Yes, Bree, absolutely. That's why marketing has to be involved, because you have to be holistic in your view of that experience, and that means the messaging in marketing as well. Yes.
Okay.
Unfortunately, we forget about the customer in date in, and start to act as though they're a distraction. Well said, Liz.
Yep.
Well said. Anyone who is in a customer support role at a company definitely will get the sense pretty quickly, unless that company is astonishingly customer-focused, that they are an afterthought. I did tech support very early in my career, and trying to get a customer's solution, right, or problem fixed could be very painful sometimes, as though they were a distraction. So well said, Liz. So going back to the question, what drives a customer's decision-making for buying, upgrading product services? Do you know, should you care? Again, going back to what we've been talking about from the beginning, what drives it is a layering of things. You have to, if it's an initial purchase or an upgrade, first off, you have to somehow reach them to realize that may be what they want, right? That it's a solution to their problem. Or that, hey, if you buy this new upgrade, that will be better than the product that you already have. So that's one way to appeal to it, right? Kind of rational sort of approach, which is oftentimes what we do in technology, because we're all a bunch of geeks and engineers. And, we think, oh, if we have all the bullet points or all the check boxes, as I think everyone has said so far, to look at some other companies, Whole Foods does a pretty good job of it, right?
Whole Foods is... So I know people who have worked for a Whole Foods,
uh-huh.
And they tell me that it is all brand impression, but not reality. They don't eat their own dog food. They don't treat their own people well.
And that Cindy,
people themselves that work there feel it's a sham.
Yeah, see, Cindy, I was actually going to say a but there when you jumped in, which is why I was kind of giving them a partial. You know, I said, you know, Whole Foods does a pretty good job as grocers go because of exactly that. They have chosen to completely focus on that front part of the cycle, right? You know, like you said, brand impression. I mean, you know, the stores are beautiful. They're well lit. The aisles are wide. The people are friendly. You get free samples when you go through. You know, I mean, Whole Foods just feels amazing for the end consumer if you can afford to buy stuff there. For the people behind the scenes, it's not so nice, at least so I've heard. Maybe that's an example of what to do in some cases, but what not to do in other cases. You can look at, let's take a company like...
Well, the thing that's sad to me is they feel that their profits are based on their brand impression, so not on human beings.
Which, you know, I mean, I hate to say
it. It's accurate, unfortunately.
Yeah, I hate to say it, but in a capitalist society, that's probably right.
But you have to wonder if they also treated their employees well and their employees extended that brand, how much more percentage-wise?
Right. Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, if you had your employees fully engaged and passionate, you're right. They would probably be more successful. I mean, you know, there are examples of that, you know, throughout the global corporate environment, right? I mean, where companies, the employees are just so passionate, they just go the extra mile, regardless of what it costs them.
Erica says, do you think it would help to give engineers personas, ensure countless decisions they make reflects customers? Well, you know, I think that's all what the Agile movement started as. The developers said, hey, we recognize, or we want to draw a line between what we're doing and the customer, and we don't want to be removed from that.
Right. Well, and in part, it's kind of funny that older processes, right, with requirements documents and all of those big happy things, when you were doing waterfall or whatever, almost ended up dehumanizing the information that you were getting from your customers as it distilled down to some fundamental set of bullet-pointed features. And so things like the personas in Agile are trying to get back to the basics and recognize that, you know, that human that's going to be buying your and using your product at the end of the day isn't just interested in the features. Absolutely, Erica. Again, spot on.
We have one more question. Where do you capture data about direct customer experience, feedback, and perception? Which is a huge question. And we've had talks about voice of the customer, voice of the market, and tools for gleaning that information.
Yeah, there are so many ways to do that, and so many companies that do it well. I think to touch on a point that I said earlier, we are in a golden age of the customer voice in the sense that post, you know, Web 2.0, right, so many more customers are accessible to us at a substantially reduced cost than what it used to, you know, than what it once cost. So I think where you capture the data, one great place to start is the internet. And, you know, whether you're on a budget and you're using something like Google Alerts, you know, which I've known startups to do, some startups, or you're using something like User Voice or, you know, Get Satisfaction or even a Facebook page, that's absolutely ground at the beginning point, you know, kind of your efforts to listen to your customer. Good product management should consider all touch points. Yes. Don't lose sight of humanity. Yes. Well said. Too true, Chris. Thanks for the RT. So beyond that, once you have a good, solid grasp of what your customers are saying to you online, both good and bad, then you can start to branch out into the more subtle or more complicated areas, right? I mean, if you're looking to edge out into an adjacency and develop a whole new market or a whole new product, you want to try and find and uncover a new pain point. Find that blue.
And you talked about social media helping us to find, you know, just some initial data. So what else would you do?
So
what are the means of getting access to the customer?
Yeah, I mean, you know, there are so many different ways you can do it. But I mean, social media is really great because you can listen to what people are saying on Twitter. You can converse with them there, Facebook, blog posts. All of that, you know, there are companies that aggregate all of that information in near time or real time for a price. and you know, the price is usually more reasonable than you would think. If you do have a research budget, that's something you would want to look. So that's one way, you know, to get info. Beyond that, there are more traditional ways. If we establish a consumer panel or a customer panel, you can interview or survey some customers. You can solicit feedback.
Social media, customer panel, surveys, feedback.
And then, of course, also, if you have a customer support arm, definitely listen to them. Because one of the things that surprised me a few times in my career is you'd have a company with a phenomenal customer support group that really just had an unbelievable first call resolution rate, right? So your customers, even though they were annoyed that they had to call in, they were happy by the end of it because everything was fixed. How often information from that customer support group wasn't making its way back to product management and to engineering so that they could look at this data and say, oh my gosh, we're spending how much on support for this, you know, which is a feature in the product that we've thought about upgrading or doing away with, but never did because it wasn't a priority. Now let's make it a priority, right?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think not only was info from customer support not making it back, but it wasn't being
acted on.
It wasn't being acted on, but it wasn't even being, in my experience, nobody was asking customer support for that information.
Yes. Yes.
They weren't using it for marketing feedback. They didn't. Right. They thought it was, they were already customers. We were
right.
only going after prospects.
Exactly.
Therefore, the customer feedback isn't relevant to marketing. That kind of blew my mind when I realized that was not unique to the organization I was in.
No, it's amazing. There are definitely companies out there. Go ahead.
Yeah, and after that I realized if when I want to get up to speed on a product, on the company, and on the history, I go make friends with customer support people.
Yes. Actually, that is one of my personal practices. As a product manager, when I come into a new organization, you know, there are some key people who I always try and get to know immediately so that I can get the real story and the real picture. And one of them is always in customer support. But that's another topic for another time.
Yes, I think so. That's a good one, though.
Okay.
I don't know how Socratic that was.
It was not so Socratic today, but that's okay. This is a format that enables valuable content. It's flexible. Still a good discussion.
Well, good. I'm glad. I certainly found a couple of new people to follow.
Key for product managers, make friends with customer support. I agree. Yep.